What's going on? It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieved stardom. On this episode, we had a chance to hang out with Bryn Cartelli over Zoom video. You may recognize Bryn from the NBC show The Voice. She was the youngest person to ever win The Voice. She was on Team Kelly Clarkson. We talk about her experience on The Voice. She was born and raised in a small town in West Massachusetts. She started off on piano at 5 years old, ended up taking vocal lessons, chorus, choir, all that stuff. And in eighth grade, she was at like a restaurant with her family and she got up on stage and started to sing a song. Someone filmed it with their phone, put it up on their Facebook page, and it went viral, like in their town. Someone from NBC saw the video and reached out to see if she wanted to be on The Voice. So in eighth grade, she went on to The Voice. She made it up until, I think, the round where they turned the chairs around. She didn't get chosen. But a week after that, NBC called her back and said, hey, we want you to come back for the next season. And in that next season, Kelly Clarkson was the new judge on the season, and Bryn got some chairs to turn around, one of those being Kelly Clarkson. She chose Kelly Clarkson and ended up winning the entire competition. She talks about that and then goes back to high school. She's still in high school after the competition ends. So she tells us about what that experience was like coming back, winning a show and having all these eyes on you to now you're back in high school, how people treated her. She talked about writing and releasing music, all about the release of her first EP based on a true story, the success of the song If I Could, and all about the new project she's working on and the most recent song called Secondhand Smoke, which she had a chance to debut on Kelly Clarkson's TV show. It was a great conversation. You can watch the video version of it on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be amazing if you subscribe to our channel. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringin' Back Pod. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, we'd love it if you follow us there as well and hook us up with a 5-star review.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Bryn Cartelli. Awesome. Hi, Bryn. I'm Adam. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I appreciate you doing this. This is a podcast about you and your journey in music, and we'll talk about your new song.
Amazing.
Sweet. So first off, talk to me about where you were born and raised. Massachusetts? Is that what I saw? Okay.
What's that like? I was born in Western Massachusetts in a small town called Longmeadow. It's a very sweet, wholesome, beautiful little town, and I'm very happy that I got to, you know, grow up there, and I'm very close to my family, so I love going back to visit them.
Are you not there? Are you in LA now?
I'm in New York City now.
Oh, okay.
I'm an East Coast girl at heart. So I'm not, this is, you know, I feel like a lot of the things that inspire and inform my music and just my life experience, I feel are true when I'm here and I can really be connected to that.
I love that. So do you come from a musical family or are you the only one that does music?
I do not. Yeah, there's my family. Nobody's in music or does any kind of thing with arts and in my family. I mean, they're all fans of music. I grew up listening to a lot of different kinds of music, but none in my household, none in my family really. I mean, my mom's father was really a phenomenal musician and just learned by ear and would always get up and sing at places, but I never got to meet him. And I've always like have felt this like, I don't know. I feel like I am him in a way. Like, I feel like I've written on a lot of his things. I've written, there's a song I wrote on my first EP called Imaginary Stranger that's kind of about that feeling. And because a lot of the things that I do, I feel connect me to him. And I've always had this weird relationship to him. And I didn't grow up around anybody that was like, they were all really supportive, but it was my own thing.
Okay. And you started playing with piano very young?
Yeah. I first started taking piano lessons. I think I was like 5. When no one could keep me away from making music, and I was singing melodies, like coming up with things as early as then, you know. I just wanted, I started doing it. Like, I was classically trained, but even then I was like writing songs on my own and kind of like composing and wanting to make something that felt like it was originally mine. And it started really, really early for me. And I've I've loved doing it. And it's just funny how you don't think at that time that it's going to be a career. It just is like it's just the most fun thing in the world, and it's so innocent. But now I get to do it pretty much every day. So it's
Cool. And to have a career, I mean, you're only 19 years old, right?
Yes.
I mean, to have your career, I mean, really kick off at 15 or so on The Voice. I mean, that's very, very rare. Obviously,
it is crazy,
youngest person ever win it. But I mean, that how cool to know what your passion is and what you want to do and have it validated at such an early age.
Yeah,
people don't even figure it out what they're going to do or what they want to do until they're in their early 20s.
I feel really lucky to have that sense of like it's unwavering, you know, that mm-hmm. feeling of like, oh, I feel like this purpose of mine and this love and passion for music and creating things is, you know, I feel really grateful to have that because I it's something I can pour myself into fully, and to have something that you love that much is just, I feel like regardless of any kind of talent that you have or anybody has, if they just care about something enough, it's a really beautiful thing.
Sure. No, I completely agree. But I was just curious. So you said at 5 is when you started learning piano, but you're always kind of, it was hard for people to keep you away from making music. Did you have a piano in your house that you were kind of going over and smashing, or was it?
I had a electric piano, like a very beginner
keyboard.
One. Yeah. And then eventually like my grandparents and my parents, and like basically my whole family together, like all shared and bought me a piano, which was really sweet. I don't remember how old I was, but it was like, once they knew I was like, this is going to be.
You're interested. It wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to take a few lessons and then.
Yeah, no, it was after some years then. And it's my baby. It's a baby grand Steinway.
Oh, wow.
It's in my hometown still. And it doesn't fit in a New York City apartment.
I would imagine.
Yeah. But every time I go back home, it's like the first place I run to. And so many of my songs, like Secondhand Smoke, the newest one was written on it. Like a lot of my songs have been written on that piano that I've had for so many years.
Wow. So even the songs that are coming out now, those were written. So it wasn't like a recent enough, or maybe it was, I mean, to be.
Yeah, back. I mean,
are you home pretty often to write?
I mean, I wrote Secondhand Smoke as I was graduating high school. So I hadn't, I wasn't in New York City yet.
Okay.
I was still living at home.
Wow. Okay. Well, how do you get then, so you're singing, you're playing piano, and then are you just doing that through, are you in voice lessons, or are you at chorus, choir and stuff, like when you're going through kind of the grades, elementary school and the middle school? And
I had a vocal coach that was local in town, and he kind of really taught me how to take care of my voice, which is so crucial now. And I use a lot of those techniques and things like that. I was in choir, I was in music class, but I kind of honestly, like, not to say I hated it because I didn't fully hate it, but I don't love being forced to do music in that way where it's like I was just like, oh, like, just put me in this music room and take all the rules out and let me just play. I was really always frustrated because also like to see other kids, I went to public school. And so, you know, it's just chaos. And to have a lot of the people that were there don't even care.
Right.
So I was always very frustrated in my music classes and and even in choir, I was like, oh my gosh, like I did it because I couldn't not be involved in it. And but I was really passionate in kind of like middle school. I helped like run the talent show.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of like informed my love for being behind the scenes and being part of like making a performance. And I like played guitar and piano and ukulele for like 7 kids in the thing and like did like 2 performances myself. I was running sound and I was like helping stage manage of like getting the people. I don't know how, I think I have a bit of a control problem, but
like, sounds like you're trying to orchestrate everything.
I know. I was like, oh yeah. I mean, it was me and like a bunch of kids, but I was like really serious. I was probably really annoying, but I had so much fun doing that. And I like went to a theater camp. Like it wasn't like a real theater camp, but when I was young, I mean, it is a real theater camp, but it's not like, it wasn't intense. It was a very sweet local place that I did like a 1-week theater camp every summer. And I even there, and I was really young, I loved being backstage and like, you know, figuring out the inner workings of the theater, the lights, the, you know, all those kind of movements of getting the behind the scenes, which now is like basically reflects to the process of making a record and doing all that. But yeah, I love to direct. Like, I think I was a very bossy, sassy child, and I really wanted to like tell other people what to do.
You knew what you wanted.
Yeah, I knew what I wanted, and now it works for me now. I found a space where I can do that. That's healthy.
Sure. Well, do you feel like when you go into the studio or something, like even for Secondhand Smoke, for a song like that, like, are you able to, do you enjoy the kind of the behind the scenes? I mean, if you wrote the song on just you and the piano, it's like you added all the production and everything. Are you really heavily involved in all of that?
Yeah, I'm very involved. I have a lot of like, I love production. I would love to be able to like produce on my own one day. The only thing that's blocking me right now is the fact that I am really impatient when it comes to computers and technology and I can't figure it out. And I'm really lucky to have friends and great collaborators that I, you know, can lean on, and we kind of bounce off of each other, and just working with people like that and having another ear, you know, it's really great. So I don't know if I'll fully do something by myself, but I do love, you know, the production side of things and building a song and having like 90 different versions of it where your brain is spinning. I'm still going through it right now. It's like, it's never ending, but it is like the most beautiful process to bring a song to life. And then it clicks and then you're like, okay.
Sure.
It's funny because it feels like, I feel like what I'm going through right now is that a song is done, but it might not be done. And sometimes you just have to be like, you have to let it go. It's very surrendering, the whole process. You have to figure out how to do that.
Right. You kind of have to give it away. I've interviewed a lot of artists that said that was a major problem, especially during COVID. You know, you're in the house and you're just spending hours like over and over and over producing something. And it's like, I just have to like not listen to this song for a month and then come back and try to figure out if I love it or if I need to tinker around more. But
there's a song that I have that's like going to come out at some point this year. And I have not listened to it in 8 months because I cannot. It will drive me crazy. And I'm getting ready to come back. I'll probably listen to it in the next week or so, but I really have been avoiding it like the plague. But I love it. I love a song and I think about it. And sometimes I just sing it to myself in the shower. So it's not gone from me. It's just you just need to distance yourself sometimes.
Sure. Is it because it's something that you hold really dear to you as far as like the meaning or lyrics or anything behind it? Or is it just happens to be a song that you're like, I know this is really good.
It's one of those,
but I want to keep tinkering with it.
Yeah. It's one that has gone through a lot of changes and a lot of versions. And so there's so many different versions of the song. And like I've rewritten it like 8 times. And so I'm like, it's just a chaotic mess in my brain, but it's going to be great when I listen to it again.
All right. I love it. So you were kind of discovered for The Voice. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on The Voice, but I know it's a big part of your journey. But you were kind of discovered via like a viral Facebook video or something like that.
Yeah, it was really random. I was performing at this like beach bar in Massachusetts. I wasn't even like, it wasn't a show I was playing. My parents were like, you should go up and ask that guy to borrow his guitar and play a song. And so I did. And somebody at the bar videotaped it and like posted it on her Facebook. And it kind of like blew up around Massachusetts people. And then somebody from NBC must have seen it. And then sent me an email, which my whole family thought was like, you're getting scammed or something.
Right. Of course. I mean,
I was like 13. And so we were like, sure. Like I'm in eighth grade. Like there's nothing better to do. Let's just see what this is. And it, you know, it was real. It wasn't a fake email.
Do you go to like New York or like, how does that work?
I first went to New York and then I made it through there. And then I went to LA and it was for season 13. And I made it to the blind auditions where you're like there for a month. It's a whole thing. It was my first time being around people that were like living and working musicians and artists.
Right, it's all ages. I mean, it's you're 13 and there's people like my age that are there.
Yeah. I mean, even old, like it's like the widest range of people from all different backgrounds. And I, you know, I just was soaking it all in that for when I was there, I was just meeting them and singing with people and just hearing their stories. And, you know, it was really incredible. And, but I didn't make it, that I didn't like turn any chairs, whatever that first time.
Right.
And then a week later, they were calling, NBC was like, please come back. And it was the same thing. It was like, you know what, if I'm still in eighth grade, I'm getting ready to go to high school. I don't really have anything better. Like, why not? Let's just do this. It's, you know, so fun to be able to meet people, and if this can go somewhere. And there were rumors that it was Kelly Clarkson that was going to be on the next season.
The next one of the judges.
Yeah. So we should do that.
Wow. When you're going to and doing this at 13, you said you went to public school, correct?
Yes.
Was that like, and that must've been the buzz of the town, right? I mean, like, oh my gosh, like Brynn's going to be on The Voice, and where people.
We had to keep it a secret. It was very like there. Were, oh. I remember it was, you know, I was like, I have to go and do something. I can't really say. But people started to find out, and there were a lot of rumors and things going around. But yeah, it's a very small town. Word travels very fast. People, sure. I'm really grateful. Everybody was so supportive and kind to me for the most part. I mean, there's obviously like high school
jealous people. Yeah.
But overall, like the town and the community was really, really beautiful to have that kind of moment. And I think when I go back, people come up to me and they say like, it really united the town in a different way, because it wasn't like, usually that's just for like sports and things. So
right.
And so it was something really different and I think exciting for a lot of people. And whoa, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, it was just really fun. And yeah, very sweet.
When you came back, I mean, to win it as the youngest person ever to win it and then have the chairs turn and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Going back the second time, did you feel like when you came home, because you came home and you're still in high school, right? After the competition's over. Was that weird going back to the school where you must have been treated a little bit different than the first time? Because at this point, it's like you've been on TV, you won the whole thing, you got a record deal out of it, I believe, and a bunch of stuff kind of comes with winning the whole show.
Yeah, it was like the strangest time of my life. You know, you're coming. I was a freshman in high school. I don't know. I was dating someone at the time and I was going to a prom and like, I was still at public high school. They didn't know what to do with me. They're just trying to make it work. I like,
this girl's going to have some of his Instagram followers and people bugging her like autographs.
Some people like, treat me like I was Beyonce and I did not it's okay. We don't need to be doing that. But everyone was just trying to look out for me. But it was definitely like, I also, you know, you win and there's a lot of, you know, things that you can get held up by with the deals that you sign on to before even making it on the show that I can't really get into, but.
Right. Yeah. It comes down to contracts and releasing songs and stuff.
All I wanted to do was make music and put out music. And it felt like that first 6-8 months, I couldn't really do anything but talk about what
winning the show.
And I was like, I don't really know. It's happening. I don't really, and I was 15. Like I'm 19 now. It's not that big of a difference, but I feel like.
But yeah, there is a big difference between 15 and 19.
Yeah, definitely. And I was just really trying to, I don't know. I was really taken away from the kids my age and high school life. And I was really taken out of that. I went to online school after that, but
I was gonna ask, I would imagine you probably just went to like a homeschool situation.
It just because
I would have
only because it just I wouldn't be able to be in a class and I didn't want to, you know, I enjoy school, so I just didn't want to be missing out on that. Yeah, it was a very, very, very strange time, and it wasn't I can't say it was the happiest, only because the things that I really wanted to do, I was legally blocked from doing it. So it was a very interesting era.
Yeah. So when did you start writing songs? Was it before? I mean, you said you've been writing songs forever, but when you started, like when you went into The Voice, had you already sat down and you're like, okay, I have some songs that I've written. I mean, it sounds like when you got out, you wanted to release stuff, but obviously contractually you can't.
Yeah.
Was that something you were already practicing prior to being even on the show?
Yeah, absolutely. I had been writing so many songs, like since I was like 12, I had really like started writing like real music. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was something. But when you're on that, you can't play and release original songs on The Voice. That's one of the rules. Mm-hmm. So or else you have to like give away all the rights to whatever. But
right.
So I didn't really do that. And I was also just focused on, I was really focused on each performance on that show. I was like helping design the stage. I was helping, I was like really heavily involved in a way that they have never had an artist before. And that's partially because Kelly let me like in on those conversations that they've
oh, wow. happened.
So I was like literally designing, like sketching stage and being like, let's do this and let's do this. And so I was really focused on that and not writing while I was on the show as much, but only because of time. And I also had to do school while I was on the show. So it just was a whole thing. But yeah, there was a lot more writing came after. I was always doing it, but it was just, yeah.
But yeah, you kind of have to I would imagine just being overwhelmed with not only the show, but then everything that came after, right? I mean, you go on tour with Kelly Clarkson.
Yes.
And was she somebody that you were like a huge fan of prior to even having her chair turn around or whatever, even knowing she was on the show?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up like screaming her songs in the car with my mom. Like my mom is really big into like powerhouse vocals, like
okay.
Mariah Carey, Kelly, Amy Winehouse, Adele, all the girls. Like that's like she really made me love that kind of music as well. And so yeah, we were huge Kelly fans, like and just meeting her and knowing her as a person and an artist and a mentor and friend. Like she's just kind of I really, really lucked out with having her in my life. And I am grateful for that every day. So she, you know, she's just the best in having that moment and having her understand what I was going through at a level that most people wouldn't was mm-hmm. really helpful for me at 15, especially.
Yeah. And you've obviously still kept in contact with her. You did you played the new song on her show. And
yes.
That's so cool to kind of keep that relationship going.
Yeah. She's like family. We love her.
So you're doing these tours, obviously COVID happens. That must have been not only a tragic thing for everybody, but you just won the show and then you're getting all this, you know, you're doing a Kelly Clarkson tour and then everything shuts down. Like how it affected everybody, but I mean as far as your career goes, like how did you must have felt pretty defeated at that point. Like you're like, I'm riding this high, and it's like, well, are we ever gonna play shows anymore? Like
you
know, what's status of music or whatever at that point?
The Kelly tour was the beginning of 2019. At that point I was like, I had signed to Atlantic Elektra Records, mm-hmm. and I instantly started writing so much music with them and meeting writers and making these trips to LA, Nashville, New York. And right before COVID, like end of February 2020, I did a trip to London. And there I met these people and I wrote these songs, and it literally was like 10 days. But it really became like something unlocked in me there and with the collaborators that just like really began to feel like the next thing. And I was like, oh my God, like we had already written the EP I had already written.
And oh, wow. So that was already done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Instantly I got to writing. I was writing on the Kelly tour a lot. Like there was a lot of things that were going on instantly just because I had so much to say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I had this London trip. I was on a high. I was like, yes, yes, yes. And then it was like March and you know, everything went crazy. But I honestly, yes, it slowed things down in a way that I'm not really angry at it, because I also in that time have never written more on my own. I've like I have a project that I've been building, and the majority of it is just written by me, which is really, really special. And I'm really proud of that. So I had these foundation songs that happened in London, and then I went from there, and it just was so real to me what had to happen. I just went and finished the world myself and with the help of like the people in London, like the two guys I loved in London and a friend in LA who, you know, these three collaborators that I adore them.
Yeah, you wrote with Ben Abram, right?
Yes.
I've interviewed him. He's super cool.
Yeah. He's, oh my gosh. We met in LA when I was writing for the EP, in Hollywood. And that was the first song, you know, the first time we ever met, we wrote If I Could. And he's just the sweetest man ever and so talented. And I remember that day, I just wanted him to keep singing. So I was like, oh, you keep going. Like, I like your version of this song. His voice is insane. He's so
talented. He's super cool. Great person. So when it comes to this, let's talk about the most recent song then. So with Secondhand Smoke, you talked mm-hmm. about that song was written on the piano at your house growing up.
Yeah, it was. I was getting ready. You know, it was like a month out of me graduating high school. Everything's kind of like coming to an end in your childhood at this point. I mean, COVID kind of, what it did that was really beautiful was that I was no longer traveling. And so that high school experience that I thought I had lost too soon kind of came back to me, which I was really excited about because I always had wanted to write from an honest place so that it could resonate with the people like my age. I you know, if I'm really connecting with people my age, I want to be able to speak accurately to the situations that we go through and not be disconnected, always hanging out with adults. Mm-hmm. So I was having a very typical high school experience, even though there was always a bit of weirdness to it for me personally because of music. And, you know, I was watching friendships kind of start to fade away. And as people are kind of realizing what they're going to carry forward with them into this next part of their lives. And, you know, there's a lot of people that I had in my life for a really, really long time that you're kind of questioning, like, what is this doing? How can I move forward from this? And the negative parts of this, are they going to be with me forever? And who am I really wanting to prioritize a relationship with? And I have so many lovely people back at home that there were a couple that I was like, this is like really impacting me in a way that I have been writing off for, you know, years. And it's funny because If I Could, that song is about one of my friends, but in a way it was used against me at the end of the day, being like, you have a relationship with someone that might not be good for you. And maybe you should listen to the song that you wrote.
Oh, okay.
So I listened to If I Could, and a lot of things had been happening. And I was just completely heartbroken because friendship breakups are just really, when it happens in a way where things have been building up for a while and nobody's saying anything and we're going through a pandemic and everybody doesn't know what they're feeling, to have a break like that happen, I was just like, that was a sense of comfort for me and someone that I spoke to for hours every day. And without them, I suddenly got really nervous about where I was going to go from there and how I could ever, if the people in my life were always going to be someone that was probably taking more than they're ever going to give. Cause it had been a slow decline of like, I don't know if this person's good for me anymore. So sure. I was, you know, that transitional period of graduating high school, getting ready to move out is so, emotions are so heightened and everybody's like really nostalgic and emotional. But I just was desperately searching for hope and thinking about coming to New York City. And I had all these, like, I was like, oh my gosh, like my dreams are going to come true and I'm going to be there and do music. But I was, you know, there's that little creep of fear that was coming through. Like, will you ever shake these habits that got you to where you are right now? Which we're finding out it's not a linear growth. It's not linear. But yeah, I wanted to write something that where I felt like I was telling myself I would be okay, even if I was scared.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you're kind of in a double, like for me, going out of high school, it's like, yeah, you have these relationships with people. Some people are going to go away to college. Some are going to stay there. Some aren't going to move at all. So that adds a different element to the relationships you have in high school. But to have COVID also happen, so then it's during that time, I feel like a lot of people were even reconsidering certain friendships or relationships. It's like, well, yeah, we've been away from each other for 2 years or a year. And it's like, you're almost a little bit more, I don't know, at least for me, a little bit more, you could be a little bit more picky about who you're spending your time with. It's like, we saw who, you know, how quickly it all could be taken away from us. Like, yeah, maybe we focus a little bit more on these relationships, but you kind of had both of those elements happening at the same exact time.
Absolutely. And I'm also like, at this time, I'm working on a lot of new music. I was writing and having like a lot of Zoom, like I was writing songs and then zooming with producers, like my collaborators that I love. And we were just, you know, catching up and talking about things. And I'd be talking about a lot of the dramatic high school stuff that would be going down. And I'm like, I don't want this. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want these kind of energies to be impacting me moving forward. And some more, like, I just, a reflection, you want the people that are closest to you, you want to be like, you don't need to agree on everything, but like our morals and our, you know, overall passions in life for making, you know, not that we need to be doing the same thing, but I think there was a lot of disconnect as I was going through that phase. And I was really, really scared because I also have a lot of love for the ones that I don't really speak to anymore.
Sure. I mean, who you associate with, right? There's like, I forgot what it is now. I'm going to mess this up, but it's something like with the percentage of the, like, you associate your people and so you're like kind of at the same, you know, even if it becomes to like how much money you make, like all these things kind of coming together within like the first, like the five closest people to you. I don't know. Like I'm saying that all wrong.
You want to know, I wasn't going to say it, but it was kind of when COVID was kind of lifting, I did a trip to LA and just worked with one producer named Keith Varon, and he's phenomenal. We've written a lot of songs together. And he said to me, and it's not the truest statement and he knows it too, but sometimes you have to wonder, like, if the five people closest to you are kind of a reflection of you, how do you feel about that? And I remember he asked me that, and I was like, I don't know how good I feel about that right now.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to go with. Like, you want to, like, the people that you surround yourself with, that's kind of, you're mirroring who these people are.
Yeah.
That's why you're getting along with them. But
yeah.
And are you mirroring the people you want to be?
Yeah, it was one of those relationships and friendships that it's someone that you would like FaceTime for, like, they could be on FaceTime for 7 hours a day. But they would like just be complaining for 7 hours a day about right. all the world and its problems. And when you're constantly talking to somebody about only things that are negative, it just gets in your brain and you just become negative. And if it's someone talking to that much, it really impacts you in a way that you don't realize until you're out of it. And suddenly you have this 7 hours of your day that is no longer filled by this person, where you have to fill it with things that are going to be good for you. And that's kind positive, of where the scope comes from. It's like, you know, so the days seem longer, but I'm going to be better because of this, I think.
Yeah. You're not sure. Is it similar? You know, if you're somebody around somebody smoking, you're just breathing in all their bad energy. And
that's right. And I had second, it's so funny because, and this happens to me all the time. I had secondhand smoke written in my notes app on like just a list of lyrics and titles that I have for a long, long, long time. And I remember waking up one morning and I just like opened my phone. I was feeling like kind of ugh about everything. Opened my phone. That was like randomly the first thing I saw. And I was like, ran downstairs. That's such like a brrr, like my family knows it's like the Bryn run when I'm like downstairs, grab the phone. Oh, run back up. If I forgot it, I need to go. It was just like instant. Like this is happening right now. Yeah.
And then the song came fairly quickly then?
I think I wrote it in like 2-3 hours. It was,
wow.
And then I had both of my parents, it was like on a Sunday and everybody was home, and I had both of my parents come and I played it for them, and they were just standing at my piano, and they were both, and my dad doesn't react like this, but they were like very emotional, like, whoa, because they knew things that were going on. And it was, sure. You know, it was really funny to be like, whoa, that really means something. And I felt like they were kind of like, this is how, wow, like realizing what had been going on and how scared I was about how it would affect me. And that was kind of my beginning to being like, maybe I will keep this one to myself. We're like, okay, I'm glad that's a good song, but maybe it's too much.
Well, we're glad that you released it because it's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's my when you're talking about just having those 7 hour conversations, I was thinking, my wife always says, like, is this a conversation that's like an, she calls them elevator conversations. Like if you're having conversations with someone, you're like, did anyone gain anything from this? Or is it just like, how you been? Like, what are you up to? And it's like, that was just such a useless piece of everyone's time. But I love the way you wrote the song. It's great. And it makes lot of sense.
Thanks.
So with you have a few songs out, right? I mean, Convertible in the Rain and Girl Code and Gemini, are these all going to be part of a project you have coming out?
They are all part of a little silly project I won't get into too much, but there is an album, and I've been really intentional with, you know, how I'm releasing these. And like I said, it's been a transitional period in my life that I've been writing so much about. And I love this. We've been talking a lot about liminality and this place of the in-between when you're not quite out, but you're not quite in anymore. Mm-hmm. And for me, that high school graduation, and you're not out of the city and you're not quite out of a friendship. But I've written so many songs about that, and it started in Massachusetts and now I'm here in New York. And so I have a project of this, everything in between and getting out.
Snapshot of all of it.
yeah, it's been really fun. And like Gemini is the first song I released because to me, it just felt so like Salem, Massachusetts and witchy. And it was about things from there. And then Girl Code was the next song because I wanted to bookend it. And Girl Code is about meeting somebody in New York. And then Convertible in the Rain and Secondhand Smoke are kind of the beginnings of these like transition and the travels between the two. So it's just getting from one place to the next, but all the ties that you have to cut and the ones you're going to form in between are really important.
I love it. I can't wait to hear the rest of it. I love what you're doing so far. And thank you so much for having this conversation with me, Brynn.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I have one more question before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Yes, I do. I think the biggest thing for people that are aspiring artists and creatives in general, I've like found that it's been the most important thing for me is to journal. And it's not necessarily need to be anything artistic or anything that you're putting a lot of effort in, but unlocking your brain every morning and writing like three, four pages of just brain dumping down. It isn't even for artists, for everybody. I think, but for creative people, the way that is just turning on the faucet for your thoughts and you're checking in with yourself in a way that, okay, so now I've started my day, I've written down the dumb things that I'm thinking about. And the way that I write is clearer because of it. The way that I think about production and music is clearer. The way that I listen and process things. It's a really meditative and beautiful thing. And I think writers and people that want to be artists should all be having those kind of moments, even if it feels really stupid. And I don't know, I know that's like a really specific piece of advice. And most people are like, stay true to yourself, but so many people have said that, like, we know that we hear it. And I just think like, if you want advice, write in your freaking journal every day, because it will help. And that's something tangible that everybody should do.
I love that. I love how specific that advice was. I just have a quick follow-up question, which I never do with people's advice. And when you do that, like when you wake up and you start writing, are you just writing down anything that you're kind of on your mind? Like, okay, today I've got to do this. Like, I'm just curious of something, like what would that look like as far as in your daily life?
It looks a lot like, hold on, like my dates and my thoughts and everything. And some days it's 3 pages and some days it needs to be 7. And you know, it's about anything I want. I just feel I challenge myself to fill at least 3 pages. And sometimes if I don't have anything to say, I write, I don't know what to write for 3 pages straight, but usually by like the second page, I find something to write about. It's just that revealing that truth to yourself about your life and what's going on and the way you feel is so important, especially if you're wanting to be an artist so that you can come from an honest, informed place. So you know where to create from, and you know, even sometimes I write words down in the journal. I'm like, hold on, gotta go somewhere else. And you know, it's all very important. I think, you know, I don't know. It has revealed so much to me and has been so helpful. And so I think everybody should do it.